Hello, Alaska. This is Pat Race.
And this is Matt Buxton.
And this is a podcast about Alaska.
It's been a while, Pat.
It has been a while. It's been a while. And actually, we did a couple episodes where we recorded them during the session, and I never just got around to editing them. That included an episode that focused on Dan Sullivan's speech to the legislature.
Oh, man. It feels so long ago.
But here we are now, and I'm glad to be chatting with you. Today is the 10th anniversary of the Hello Alaska podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. I think that, like, you know, back then we had met basically and really got to know each other at the former Governor Bill Walker's meeting on the Mount.
Oh, we went and to Fairbanks?
It was the UAF Fairbanks. There was like this sort of, it was right in the wake of like the 2013 collapse in oil prices where they came back down to earth and then the state's sort of budget quickly fell apart. Mm-hmm. And it was a sort of big question about like what was next in Alaska. And I think it was so interesting because, you know, I think I had been in Alaska. So I got there in 2011. And so we were hanging out in 2015. So it was like 4 years later. And I already felt like so committed to the state. I think it was so energizing to see this big kind of great vision for what Alaska could be. And, you know, I think it was, you know, especially coming from outside, it was such an interesting perspective of this place with this sort of blended purpley politics of gun-toting hippies and pot-smoking Republicans up in Fairbanks. And we had this sort of, you know, the unique sort of thing of the Alaska Permanent Fund and all this sort of stuff. And it felt like this sort of great opportunity to sort of chart the course of this great state that I loved and had already given me so many opportunities. And then 10 years later, we're still fighting a lot of those same kind of battles of like what's next for this state.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that for me, that's one of the themes that runs through this. And I feel like there's just been a lot of stagnation. And I point my finger at Dunleavy administration, but it's, you know, that's been 7 of the 10 years that we've been doing this, that we've been having these conversations. And, you know, it did feel like when we were first kind of getting into this, you'd come down to Juneau a couple times because you were working for the News Miner in Fairbanks, and you'd come down to Juneau to cover the session. And I think I got to know you, like I remember having lunch with you at the Rookery a couple times or something like that. So I kind of got to know you in Juneau a little bit. And then that Fairbanks trip was a big one. And then I think we just started talking more and more and kind of came up with this idea of like, let's have a podcast where we talk about the legislature. And I remember some of our earlier episodes were more like deep divey, like we were looking at specific issues pretty deep, and it was a fun way to go. We did you were covering the Fairbanks 4, and we did like a multi-episode mm-hmm. thing on the Fairbanks 4, and we did the
crane game.
Yeah, oh my god, I love the crane game one. That was
Marmot fun. Day.
Yeah, but you also were reporting on the clean air in Fairbanks, so mm-hmm. the particulates and burn bans and things like that. So it was fun to kind of dig into those deep issues, and we haven't done that in a while.
And that's like another issue that, you know, Alaska is still, you know, still struggling to solve, right? I think it was such an informative moment for me, or should have been such an informative moment for me when I first came to the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. And, you know, I was replacing Chris Eshelman, who went on to a job in economics. And his going away cake, because everyone got like a going away cake that was sort of themed to their interests in reporting in Alaska. And his was that big blue natural gas drop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it was gas to Fairbanks. And it was like, it felt like it was just going to be around the corner. And so I spent like the first 5 years of my time at the News Miner reporting on this sort of interminable fight to get natural gas to Fairbanks. And then, you know, they were building pipes, but the source of the gas. So anyway, it's all,
yeah.
It was very, I think to me, you know, that's, I think, the thing that's great and so frustrating about the state in a lot of ways is that, you know, there's so many sort of emergent needs, sort of changing world, big things that are well beyond our boundaries that affect us in big ways, and like climate change, oil prices, all that sort of stuff. And so it feels like, you know, there's so much opportunity and so much need to do stuff, but at the same time, we love to spin our wheels in, and I think kind of, it sort of, And thinking about the Alaska legislature and the sort of conversations we had around the summit and sort of the, you know, future of Alaska and how we're going to pay for it, what we want, how we're going to pay for it, that sort of stuff, is that like it, there's a lack of people making like the tough decision in a way. I think there's like a lot of like sort of inertia toward the easy, towards the comfortable, towards the sort of like unshakable sort of stuff. And I think it's sort of an interesting thing because it's, you know, it's almost very human in the same sort of way. It's like, yeah, we know we got to start exercising. We know we got to eat better.
Yeah.
But it's hard, you know? We don't want to be the person, yeah, we want to be the fun dad, you know?
People get punished for making the tough decision. I mean, like Walker with the permanent fund, right? So that's something that happened in the, within the last 10 years is that the way we think about the permanent fund has fundamentally changed. Like it is now funding government. We don't get the statutory dividend, you know, and that was a big decision that, that Walker made and that the legislature eventually backed up, but he really took the, you know, he, you saw what happened to him as a result of making that decision. And so that's, you know, I think that people shy away from hard decisions because there's often consequences. They're like, okay, you're going to make me exercise. I'm going to get pouty.
Yeah. And I think, with Walker and the PFD, it's so interesting because it really is, you know, was kind of a crazy decision at the time, but, you know, has become a important foundational element of how we pay for government in Alaska. And it's so interesting because, you know, you look back at those discussions, they passed it's called the POMV. It's the sort of way we started treating the permanent fund like an endowment that helps fund government. You know, at that time, there was a lot of discussion, and I believe one of the chambers did pass a bill that had a reworked PFD formula in it, and they kind of balked at the last minute, and that was the one best chance we had, or they had, excuse me, to change that rule and change sort of that direction. And the lack of decision making on it has left this big sort of hanging issue over us that has continued to frustrate everything.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the other, like when we talk about the changes, like my view on the legislature has changed a lot. The legislature has changed a lot. The, you know, the fishing hook that got me into Alaska politics was like the Veeco scandal and the kind of open face corruption that was happening in the legislature. And, you know, I don't see that kind of stuff quite as much anymore. And it feels like the people that are in there are really doing a good job and really trying to do a good job. And we have these, you know, this bipartisan coalition, you know, or tripartisan, pan-partisan, like you've got these independents and
multi-partisan.
Yeah, multi-partisan. Yeah. So,
the word
yeah.
I like to find.
So you got this, so you got this multi-partisan coalition that's doing, like, trying their best to do good work, you know, getting thwarted by vetoes. But from all appearances, it seems like they're really doing a good job. And that's a result of the open primaries. And that's been a big change. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me, that's something that's been kind of a, you know, silver lining to everything else that feels a little stuck. It feels like the legislature's really evolved in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think is always really made me interested in Alaska politics is that, like, there were more politicians than not that I covered, because I covered Fairbanks mostly, that for whom, you know, they were primarily Fairbanks politicians and then party aligned, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought that, you know, spoke really well to what we want from our elected officials, right? That we want them to be representatives primarily first and foremost for us and not for the political parties that help put them in the office, right? And I think that the sort of ranked choice voting, you know, there's so many like glimmers of that, right? That you would see then, like in the, you know, over the last decade before ranked choice voting, where they would be these glimmers of sort of like moderate Republicans or just sort of non-party aligned Republicans who were getting in there and were, yeah, like, right, very focused on doing a good job. And, you know, frequently they would get like run out of the House, right? And that was sort of under the traditional system. And that's sort of how we got to this sort of big problem on the national level, right, where politics is the most important thing, or, you know, party affiliation is the most important, your most important job in office. And I think that, you know, it's so good to see that ranked choice voting is here. I think that everyone seems to be sort of getting it better now. I think that the Republicans are even sort of understanding that, you know, the rules are just different, right? It doesn't mean that you can't win in these districts, but it does mean that you need to be a little more representative of it. And I think, yeah, I think that the quality of representation, especially this sort of like return to this sort of spirit of service is back, you know, in a big way. And I think that's really good.
Yeah. You know, we think about what's happened the last 10 years. I'm thinking, like, what's the next 10 years look like? And one thing that it just feels really pivotal is this, like, next midterm election that's coming up in 2026. And for me, I've been trying to just rack my brain about, like, how can I, you know, have a meaningful impact? How can I, you know, help Alaskans make a good decision? And, you know, I like, together, we kind of need to have these discussions about what we want to be and where we want to go. And we need to make some real decisions about that. And, you know, whoever we pick for our governor is going to really have the biggest impact on us. It's just, we've seen over the last 8 years how much it matters, because the governor appoints so many positions. They appoint all these commissioners. They run the departments. They decide which lawsuits we get. And,
they, ignore and lawsuits. Yeah.
So it's a big deal. Right now we've got, 13 Republicans, one Democrat, and, well, I guess Cliff Bishop's a Republican, but maybe kind of moderate Republican. So we've got a pretty weird field shaping up. It could still evolve and change quite a bit. But my, you know, my main thing is I just don't want more Dunleavy. And there's a lot of Dunleavy 2.0 coming along. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting to me with that race, because you do have, you know, you have the lieutenant governor, you have the former attorney general, you have the former revenue / health and social services commissioner. And so I think, you know, to me, at the very least, it sort of speaks to a level of, like, maybe discontent within the Republican Party that I think is interesting. I think, too, this thing.
Do you think that's what it is? Do you think it's.
Well, I think it's really interesting to see the Dunleavy administration launching, like, a independent investigation into Adam Crum, right?
Well,
like,
that feels showy to me, but
it does. Yeah. But it also isn't, like, good news for him, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the sort of thing that you do when the system is on your side, I think. So, right. So I think that it at least speaks to, like, the fracturedness in there. But again, like, if you kind of look across the spectrum, I don't really know what anybody's actually offering that's all that special or different than Dunleavy. Like, so, you know, the prospect of another, like, 4 years of being stuck in neutral, I think, is, like, really, really the worst thing about it.
Or 8 years.
Or eight years.
I mean, like, 4 years can turn into 8 years really easily, and that's kind of what I've seen. Is, like, I never thought Dunleavy would get elected again. I thought we were not.
I mean, he was facing a pretty serious recall, right? I mean,
yeah.
And if we're being honest, you know, I think that a lot of the pandemic changed so much, right?
Absolutely.
It really gave this guy a lifeline.
It was the pandemic. It was AnSink's success in managing the pandemic in Alaska, and it was our turnover. You know, Alaska's population turns over so quickly that we have a very short institutional memory, and people are like, oh, this guy, like, all of a sudden a whole new group of people rotate in that are like, I'm going to vote for this guy because he's tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like, to me, when I'm looking at this race, at the Alaska Current, we've had a couple conversations about how we're covering the race next year. And I think one of the really big things that I want to focus on more here is that, like, I think that we, this idea where we have, like, the candidate questionnaires and that sort of tells you everything, you know, the idea that you'd be fully informed off of that, I think is just, like, such an outdated idea. Really, because, you know, what we saw with Dunleavy, the most effective thing, his most effective strategy, you know, campaign decision really was to just not answer questions, not participate in forums. So I think that there's a really big struggle to sort of cover these races and these sort of big questions if the candidates just aren't willing to play ball, right? Well,
yeah, and the newsrooms are smaller and working with less money, and it's just like
getting the word out
about people is very difficult.
Yeah, and so I think, like, for me, one of the big ways of refocusing this race is, I think, talking about, like, the things that are important to us, right? Mm-hmm. Then talking about the big decisions that we have coming towards us. And I think with, like, someone like Dunleavy, too, I think, you know, frankly, the kind of governor that he was never something that would have been captured in a candidate questionnaire, right? And I think that, though, if you look at, like, kind of the person he was and is and how he acted in the legislature, that was a lot more informative to me. And that's something that, like, isn't captured that way. But I think that it's, like, there's a decent human index that I think is sort of difficult to capture. But I also think that, like, one of the ways that I want to like refocus my coverage in this next year is really focusing on like what people want. You know, what do people in our community want from the next governor? What are these big decisions that they need? And I think that we're offering it as like we are a state that is in a lot of change and flux. And what is who is the candidate who's sort of best suited to meet that challenge? Not so much like a like menu sampler of like what flavor of governor do we want next. I don't know.
So are you asking those questions now? Are you talking to people and or hearing things?
Starting
to,
yeah.
What does that look like when you're hearing things from people when you're asking those kind of questions? Like what are you hearing back about what people want and need and are looking for?
So far, I think it's a lot of people want like more honesty. I think like a willingness to talk about like issues. And I think you kind of hear actually, you know, honestly, one of the best sort of encapsulations, I think, of what we want from the next governor's race or the big issues that I think at stake is the keynote address from AFN. Natasha Singh spoke at that. She is the president and CEO of ANTHC. And she was talking a lot about like these, you know, basically how like the talk of a big PFD with sort of no hard decisions is just unrealistic, right? There's and she put it, she's like, you know, she was, her speech is focused towards the Alaska Native audience, and she was saying, you know, I'm not willing to lie to my people about the situation facing our state. And I think that's really important right now. I think that, you know, this sort of discussion about the size of the PFD, revenue, services is sort of like never, hasn't really been honestly had. And I think that there hasn't really been, I think there's sort of a like reflexual sort of instinctive, like taxes bad, yeah. Revenue bad, government bad, all this sort of stuff, PFD yeah. good, sort of thinking that I think really hems you in if you are a progressive person who does believe that progressive, you know, values of, you know, government and paying for it are like a valuable piece of life. And I think that like just being more honest and being more kind of like willing, having courage and convictions of your values, right, is like a big thing. And I think that we have a lot of people that feel like they're just sort of saying what they, you know, feel like is the most politically expedient promise.
Well, we've got at least one, probably more candidates that are running that are already saying what Dunleavy was saying in like 2018, which is
yeah.
I'm going to give you a full statutory PFD and pay for it by cutting the government. I remember we had a lot of conversations about across the board cuts and how they were like these unspecified, we're going to cut 5% from every department or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. It's not efficient. It's not targeted. It doesn't mean anything. And it also just like is not realistic that you're going to be able to pay out that statutory PFD.
Yeah.
And so to hear candidates lining up for an election in 2026, repeating failed talking points from 2018 is a little bit like, you know, not a little bit, it's a huge red flag for me.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's like, you know, I think sort of putting those issues, you know, front and center as we're talking about this race is going to be really important just to center those sort of issues.
I don't know how any candidate can run for governor and say, I'm going to cut the government and point to something that like Dunleavy hasn't already tried. Or like, I mean, like Dunleavy was such a like, I'm going to cut the government guy. If he couldn't cut the government after all the promises he made, like, what are you going to do? Like what nickel or quarter or dime are you going to pick up and find that he didn't find? Like, are you criticizing his work in cutting the government, or are you just saying this because it's a popular thing for that people want to hear?
Right.
And you were saying this earlier about the government. Like, I think that, you know, like we have such a disconnect. Like we are the government, right? Like on the municipal level, on the state level, on the federal level, the government is of the people, and we get this like antagonistic relationship with the government because we don't want to fill out a piece of paperwork, or because we think that they spent money badly on this. Oh no, they spent $2,000 on this project that I disagree with, or, you know, and we get so weirdly like antagonistic against the government when it's really like our own interests. And if we just like participated a little bit more, then it would reflect those interests a little bit more.
I mean, I think it's so interesting. You know, we in Anchorage, there was a recent so they passed a law where basically everyone over, if you're drinking alcohol, you had to be carded no matter what, right? Well-meaning issue, right? You know, people have got the red stripe, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
huge, monumentally big pain in the ass for everybody involved, especially the servers who have to like implement that law, right? And they ended up going back on it, right? And I think it was like in part because people were saying it's a bad idea, right? And I think if people had just sort of written it off as like, oh, just the terrible government, whatever, what, you know, just the latest horrible thing they do, then maybe it doesn't change. But I think that like being engaged on that stuff in a constructive way, especially when it like doesn't make sense, right? Like appealing to those sort of issues, I think like, yeah.
Like, yeah. Like fix the government. Don't blow it up and destroy it is like mm-hmm. a better, I mean, it's like we all live in this big building and we're all in this big building and there's some things that are wrong with it. And we can either fix those things or we can tear it down without having a plan for building something new. Yeah. And to me, it just feels like it makes so much sense to just care for what we've got a little bit, you know?
I mean, no, feels like, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, yeah, totally. I think, you know, that's sort of what I think is sort of frustrating in this political moment for me is that it does feel like there's a lot of breaking going on, right? Like, oh, yeah. We have a very literal metaphor, you know, on the White House
oh,
right
my God.
Now of a ballroom and it's been destroyed. Right?
No, the East Wing is gone.
They literally don't have the plan for what's yeah. next, right? Like, it looks like it's just a bunch of AI, like, renderings to me.
Yeah. You know,
without, like, actual architectural plans.
Yeah, they'll build a box and put some stuff in it. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But it is disrespectful of the process. And, like, you know, to hear them go on the news and say, like, we're allowed to tear down anything we want. It's just building permits that we need to, like when we build stuff, we need to do it through the right processes. And it's wild because you're like, okay, wait, are you saying you could like tear down the Lincoln Memorial without yeah. asking anyone?
So I'm kind of curious. So I feel like those sort of stories, you know, it you know, the ballroom, mm-hmm. the East Wing or whatever, it like feels like the sort of thing that's playing on the TV in the beginning of like a monster movie, right? Like this is sort of the backdrop of this sort of fast disintegrating world. How are you handling it? I mean, you're a small business guy in a town that relies a lot on tourism, you know, and you're simultaneously getting all optimistic, everyone optimistic and like thinking high sort of things about civil service. I mean, how are you holding on? How are you kind of maintaining a sort of, I don't know if positive outlook is the right word, but like productive outlook?
I mean, so for me, like the national stuff just feels so far beyond my reach that I, you know, and I believe in that saying that like all politics is local. I think that when there's those kind of those big national issues, the thing that I gravitate to is the local issues. And like we actually had a really disheartening local election recently, and that was a bigger bummer to me than some of the national stuff because it's just like so out of my arm's length. But state government is something that I have mostly paid attention to, and I feel like I can see where slow, gentle pressure over a lot of years has an impact. And in a state the size of Alaska, with a population the size of Alaska, you can have 10 people that care about something and make a ton of progress on it. And, you know, you can have one person that cares about something and give it a lot of visibility. And I think that there's a lot of room in the state for good things to happen because we still communicate with each other like humans. We're still forced to interact with people across party lines. We're still in these social groups that are made up of people with a lot of different backgrounds and, you know, different work experiences and life experiences. And I think that cross-pollination in Alaska is something that gives me a lot of hope. I don't know that I have, you know, on the national level, I don't know what comes next, but I feel like, you know, in Alaska, we're survivors up here. You know, you look at the people that are experiencing the, you know, the typhoon that just rolled through, and like, that's way worse than anything I'm dealing with. And they're, you know, out of homes, out of community. Like, I can't even imagine if 90% of my community was destroyed overnight. Like, what does that look like? And, you know, I think that they're going to need a lot of help, and they're going to need to rebuild. And I think that that's kind of the state that our nation is in, right? We need to, we're kind of weathering the storm right now. And I know there's more weird, wacky stuff that's coming down the road, but you know, we need people that are going to be looking forward to, like, how do we rebuild when it's over, or can we rebuild, or how do we dislodge this weird power structure that's developing where we just have one branch of government? Yeah, I don't know. You say, like, what keeps you hopeful? Like, I've definitely been, like, I've been down in the dumps. I think it's part of the reason I haven't been recording this podcast with you a lot, like, this last year, is I think it's just been hard to talk about politics. It's been hard to talk about what's going on in the world. And it's one of the reasons I like to keep it a little more focused on Alaskan stuff, is because some of the, you know, like, we're blowing up boats in the middle of the ocean that without any due process, and we're like, we're just extrajudicial killing. It's very disturbing. And you know, I think that
kidnapping people on the streets.
Yeah. And I think that what do you do to that? You look at that and you say, I reject this. I don't want this. And then you try to get people who are enabling it pushed out of office. Dan Sullivan is standing strong with these guys. He needs to go.
Oh, he's in.
Nick Begich needs to go. All, yeah. Like, all these guys that are, they aren't focused on Alaskan issues. They're focused on sucking up to the president, who is doing terrible things. And so I think we need to turn over our congressional delegation, but also what is going to impact us more is the governor's race. And so we need to keep an eye on that as well. And I think that, you know, for better or worse, this government shutdown is bringing attention to it. I think we're going to have, I think we have some economic woes ahead of us that people are going to feel really viscerally. And I don't know if that changes things or not, but I sure hope it does. I hope that people, you know, I hope people get smart. I hope people understand why things are happening or have conversations about them. I think there's a lot of, when we're comfortable, it's easy to tune these things out. And when we're uncomfortable, we have to pay attention to them.
Yeah. And I think, like, the typhoon really, like, encapsulates a lot of kind of our current situation, I think, right now. I think that, you know, it's a good reminder that, yeah, the sense of, like, local community and, you know, helping your neighbor out, right, is a really big element of it, right? And I think that we saw a lot of frustration, you know, there's a lot of frustration and uncertainty around the federal response to it. But the fact that, you know, City of Anchorage, all the different communities, countless volunteer organizations have, like, really, like, stepped up to make sure people have, like, at least something. You know, there's so much uncertainty moving forward. But, like, I mean, heck, like, there was, you know, the big operation to save everyone's pets from Kipnuk, you know, is, like, a really big sort of really moving thing that reminds me of, you know, just, like, you know, we go back, we've talked about this line before, right, is that, like, when, you know, us, you know, in Alaska, there's this sort of feeling that if you get stuck on the side of the road, someone will, you know, someone's going to help you out, right?
Yeah.
And I think we've been challenged on that at certain times. Our faith in that has sort of been challenged. But I think that, like, the moments like this really remind us that at least we've got each other's backs to some extent.
You know, I had an experience this summer. We were out fishing, and the motor, I pulled the pull cord and it snapped, and I couldn't get it to, I, you know, pulled the cowling off. I was trying to get the outboard to start, and we're out in the middle of South Pass and just drifting around in circles and moving pretty fast. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, we probably would have been fine. We would have washed up somewhere and worked on it and got it working. But we're just out there spinning around in circles, and this boat comes up and tows us in, and it was great. It was like, you know, didn't want to know what our party affiliation was. They didn't, like, you know, it was just like, oh yeah, hey, how's it going? And I felt terrible. I was just like, oh man, what a chump I am. I should have been more prepared. I should have had the kicker on. I should, you know, all that kind of stuff. And these guys were just so fucking good about it. They towed us in, and they're like, oh man, that's happened to me more than once. You got, you know, nice to glad we could help you out, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It's just like, oh man, it is still part of our ethos. And I think that there's something about Alaska that is really great that I want to hang on to. And I think maybe that's the thing that would be my biggest fear, is to, like, lose that. And, you know, like, if the population blew up and, you know, we didn't have this game of cultural telephone, and it was just kind of, if we got swamped by, I don't know, 100,000 people could really change the shape of Alaska. You know, like, if 100,000 people from Arizona move up here and build, you know, New Phoenix, out in the valley, like it could get real weird. And I and I think that's the, you know, like if we're talking about like dark futures, that's sort of the thing that scares me a little bit.
I think that is such a good reminder. You mentioned it there, is that like they didn't check your party affiliation, especially looking at the federal stuff. It is so, you know, deeply partisan, and it's so like us versus them. And I think it's obviously, you know, by design, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it, yeah, I think it like ultimately feels so un-American to like be so pitted against one another.
When
maybe
also,
it is.
And oftentimes,
you know, I'm being a little idealistic. We've obviously been pitted against one another.
But oftentimes,
the definition of who is an American has obviously changed many times.
Sure.
But I think that there's like this idea that, you know, that we would hate our fellow person because they voted for a different party is pretty rough. And it really, you know, I think this sort of, and I think that sort of anger and sort of vitriol like enables so much worse, right? And I think that's what's so scary about this moment. But I think, you know, that's sort of, you know, those, that's what a few people really want us all to be doing, right? And the what we, you know, the worst way to respond to it is to sort of fall into that trap too, and lose and be, you know, start to treat them and treat other people like they're the enemy. And so I think, yeah, it's just a good reminder that like there's so much more than to life than politics. And I think that's kind of a good reminder for this summer for me. Like I've definitely not been as productive with my newsletter or this podcast or a lot of other things. But, you know, there's a big, for me, it's like I've spent so much more time this year being focused on things outside of politics. Now, you know, some of it's a little bit of escapism, but I think that's so important to remember that, you know, it's so much more than the halls of Juno or the Capitol or whatever. And there's so much more that we can do to make our community better and make our own lives better outside of it. So,
yeah, I mean,
get a little misty eyed here.
I feel that way a little bit too. Like I want to, you know, host community events and do that stuff, but it feels to me like I kind of almost take the other path of like, you work in covering politics. And so for you taking a break is outside of that, you know, I'm trying to be like a working artist, and it feels like so often I get called away from that by like the reality of I can't do this right now because the world's so busted and I need to work on the world a little bit so that I can, you know, sit under my tree and draw comics. But it's the so like and this might be an interesting framing for this kind of discussion we've been having, but one of the things I want to do is sort of a like small book, like short pamphlet style, a long editorial cartoon. Basically like rounding up a bunch of the political comics I've done, some of the ideas that we've presented in our political satire films, along with other pieces of Alaska history, contemporary Alaska history, like within the last, you know, 10 to 20 years, and just sort of paint this picture, draw this arrow of like, this is where we're going, this is what we've done, and we're at kind of a turning point. What kind of decision do you want to make for the future of the state? Do you want it to look like X, or do you want it to look like Y, or do you want it to look like Z? And I think that we're, you know, that's the question that you said that we're asking at these elections is one of values, of like which, you know, not which candidate do you want, but which policy pursuits are we going to go after, right? Mm-hmm. And who's going to be the best person to implement that? And I think that's a great way to think about candidates, is, you know, policy over people. And, you know, sometimes people get in the way of policy. Sometimes people are the own worst enemy of their policy. But I think that if we can look at that baseline of like, what is the thing that we would all like to see built, and then who are we hiring to do that job of building it? I like that way. So, so yeah, this comics project is one way I'm thinking about that. And then the other thing I've been putting a ton of time into is we're exploring creating a new political party in Alaska. And so I've been meeting with folks off and on since 2022, just talking about like what that might look like, what are the fundamental values for the thing, you know, and then building from there into policy, like, okay, we've established this set of values. Now, what does the policy that sits on top of that look like? And who are the best people to implement that? And when I say a party, I'm thinking very non-traditional. So this is probably not like running a lot of people, but more weighing in on the people who are running, open to people participating who are not necessarily part of that party, open to decision making that's more gradient or grayscale than yes or no binaries, more of a group grassrootsy kind of effort than a top down party leadership kind of style. So yeah, it's been a long, slow burn, but there's been all these little things that I want to do to kind of just poke at the shape of things, you know, like ask the question of like, why does the party, why do we need parties that are shaped like this? Why don't we have, what could it look like here? And, or what does the contemporary history of Alaska say about where we're going and where we want to go? And I think that those are, I'm trying to like figure out ways to engage in policy that like don't frustrate me, I guess. So
yeah,
I think if you're saying, going back to the question of like, how do you keep your head on your shoulders, I think it's trying to find ways to engage that feel meaningful, that don't grind you down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, do you have any hot ideas for my,
I mean, I think that like, to me, you know, one of the more interesting moments in Alaska politics, right, was that rise of the Muskox Coalition, right? Which I don't even think they really went by that name all that much.
Yeah.
But I think it did like represent making the right choice, even though if it was a hard choice in the moment. And I think that for me is a big thing, is that, you know, I look back at Governor Walker, right? And I think that he's such an interesting person who kind of, you know, obviously did, you know, what he felt was the right thing in the moment and paid a big price for it, right? And I think that it's impossible to, you know, overstate that how much of a better spot Alaska is because he made that moment decision in the moment. I think that the follow-up might not have been super great, but I think that's just sort of the reality of it, right?
Have you, did you, sorry, this is a completely different change of subject. Yeah. And now for something completely different. The podcast that Andrew Gray does, East Anchorage Book Club, I listened to a bunch of episodes where he's interviewing journalists. Have you listened to any of those at all?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was fascinating.
I was one of the very first back in the day, and yeah.
And yeah. Okay, anyways. He interviewed James Brooks. He interviewed Wesley Early, interviewed just a ton of people that are influential and interesting in journalism in Alaska, about changes in journalism and about the shape of the media landscape. And I think there's, you know, I caught some criticism of where he's coming from as a legislator doing these interviews. But I think that like the discourse was really valuable. And I listening to those pieces was really interesting in terms of thinking about how we communicate about our communities and our policies and our needs and our wants. And yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to put a plug in there. Listen to James's interview. You have thoughts?
Yeah, I did see recently though that he had messaged me on Facebook, who was like, "Hey, we didn't do you justice in the first one. We should do a new one." And then I just didn't see it until like a couple days ago, and it was like a month old.
I don't know that I would recommend necessarily going on the show, but I would recommend listening to maybe like James's interview, and he did one with Jeff that like was kind of interesting to me because he was sort of holding Jeff's feet to the fire in an interesting way. Like where he kept asking Jeff, like, you're cool with Suzanne Downing now, even though she said you murdered your friend? And like,
yeah.
Anyways, it was for the inside baseball, like Alaska policy set, I think there's some interesting things there.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's sort of interesting too. I don't really have like a strong opinion on it, but like, it is interesting to have like a sitting legislator like be doing this.
Yeah. Will Muldoon got really testy about it, and it's because it blurs the line between what is a personal project and what is a government project, and he's posting about it on his government website or whatever and newsletter and things like that, and it's kind of it's not like he's making advertising money or anything. Yeah. So it's a little
that
bit
that'd be the line to cross. Yeah
But he interviewed Dan O'Neill, Wesley Early, Jeff Landfield, James Brooks, Larry Persily, Ryan Binkley. That was an interesting one. Nat Herz, Pat Doherty, and it was a pretty big list of people. Tom Hewitt, yeah. So in terms of like media, like press club stuff, I think that there's like an interesting summary in there somewhere. But okay, yeah. Complete tangent. I'm gonna take that all out.
Okay.
So how do we want to end this thing? How do we want to?
I don't know. I kind of feel like we've sort of been like circling it.
Yeah. Well, like, it feels like we're like, everything's bad. Everything's not too bad, but maybe it's pretty bad, but it's bad. But
yeah.
I think that like we've talked kind of about the past stuff. I'd love to go down this trajectory of like, what do you think are the what do you think are the paths ahead for Alaska? What are the scenarios that, like, actually, okay, let me ask that question.
Yeah.
Like, from where you're sitting right now, what do you think are some possible futures for, you know, Alaska? Like, what are some of the things that we might be facing down in the next 10 years? I mean, I've been, for example, we talked about the natural gas pipeline. Like, that's something that I've been really dismissive of because of our history. But also, you know, like, it is possible that it could happen. And, like, in what ways does that change us? In what ways does that benefit or harm us? What does it look like if we do get another Dunleavy governor? What does it look like if Click Bishop is governor? What does it look like if, you know, there's major changes to the federal government, but we're sort of still this, like, favored state? You know, I think there's a lot of, like, different tangents we can go down, and there's some things we have control over and some things we don't. Of the things we have control over, like, what are the things that you think are kind of the big pivot points?
Well, I mean, I think that the big issue, right, is that, you know, that there's a kind of a cost to this last 8 years of sitting in an idle. I think the fiscal cliff, we've sort of, you know, punted that year by year, kind of lucked out here and there. But I think that those hard decisions are coming pretty soon, right? I think there's going to be a decision point within the next couple of years where it's going to be, are we going to do taxes or are we going to eliminate the rest of the PFD? And I think those are really, like, that's kind of the big issue that's going to face anyone, right? There's sort of almost, we're almost like on a collision course with that regardless of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess if we did revenue yesterday or today, right? If we went, called us, you know, we might be able to sort of save it. But I think that's a real question that we're going to have sooner than later. I think one of the things that a legislator told me a long time ago is, you know, that they view this not as a question of, are we going to implement an income tax at the end of the day when it all finally kind of burns through, we finally burn through all that sort of padding funding, but what we're probably going to just ratchet up oil taxes again. And we've got some projects on the way, and they just opened up a bunch of stuff on the North Slope. So I do think that that's a really big question there. I think that's going to be something that anyone faces. I think that how we handle it is going to be really big, right? So, you know, I think there's factions. And I think that's sort of one of the interesting things, too, when we talk about kind of the alliances in the Alaska legislature, right? So we've pulled together this sort of progressive, moderate, independent faction that for whom they value having a properly funded government. But they kind of are sort of divided a little bit more on the question of the PFD, of revenues. There's definitely people within there that say we should be changing oil taxes. We should be looking at income taxes. There are other people who say we shouldn't look at any of that until the PFD is gone, right? And I think that there's like a little bit of a friction point in there. We've talked a lot about the Republican side of things, right? Of, the 11 different flavors of Dunleavy basically on right. That ticket. But you do have, you know, you have Click Bishop, who's going to be, you know, your moderate Republican. What his running mate looks like is going to be really interesting. Because I think that kind of the centrist, independent-ish, you know, moderate Republicans really do like, you know, this guy is interesting to them, right? And I think, you know, but the thing is that kind of quadrant on their own can't really elect anybody. So, his appeal toward the left, the center is going to be really interesting there. So I think that's, you know, obviously I think that sort of the flavor of person we get in there is going to really dictate how we address this really, you know, this big issue that's going to be coming due sooner than later, I think. But again, I've been expecting this huge fiscal cliff since like 2015, right. 2016. And
when you said that,
kind of just like, sort of like we're like hanging over it with the front two wheels off of it. And
yeah.
We're just sort of we're trying to all get to the back of the bus and keep our weight on the land for a little bit longer. So,
I mean, this isn't a clip show, but I feel like if it was, I could just string up like 40 times that we've said, oh, we're like the fiscal cliff is coming. Like here it is. Oh my God, we're just postponing it.
Yeah.
I mean, although it has been, you know, we could look at it as more of a boiling frog scenario. Like we did get the smallest PFD accounting for inflation that we've ever received. So it is sort of a ratcheting down mm-hmm. of like, oh, okay, well that's just the PFD dwindling and dying and going away slowly is maybe more of what we're seeing than all of a sudden big rug pull.
And on the tangent there, or like the thing that frustrates me so much about that, right, is if you kind of look back at like the previous like deals that were sort of put forward as like acceptable PFD changes, right, have all been better than they are now, right? Like every time with a 75-25 would have been better than this, I think. There's at one point there was a 50-50 discussion. That would have been better than this. And sort of the refusal, the sort of refusal to like actually address that and settle it,
the deals just get worse. Only made
the final deal worse and worse, right? Our like financial position is like is eroding and eroding from each one of these. And so like I think that there's, if you look at kind of, if you look at the current wheel of like gubernatorial candidates, and if you were to sort of weight them sort of equally, right? Like there's a lot more like idle, you know, Republican idleness on that wheel that right now than there are other options. And I think I would really like to see more candidates for governor that are not all on the right side of the ticket. Right now, the only Democrat is Tom Begich. There's a lot of discussion that Mary Peltola could get in. There's discussion about a lot of other people that might be interested or getting in. But I think a lot of people are honestly just waiting to see what Peltola does.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like the longer and longer that issue sort of takes to like work its way through the system, like the less and less like certain I feel about any of it, right? Because I think the longer you wait, you know, that's cutting off your knees about campaigning, about fundraising. So I think it's like one of those things where it's like you got to make a decision like soon.
What do you think about her not making a decision? Like, is that?
I think that's like kind of an indictment a little bit. I mean, I think if you're going to, I would hope that if you're feeling like you want to run for governor, that you take it seriously enough to like get off the pot, right? Like to go just to do it, right? And I think that there's, to me, this sort of like mercurial sort of like hemming and hawing sort of doesn't feel great, right? It feels to me like, it's sort of one of like we're already losing this by, you know, focus grouping this too much or something.
I think if I had to guess, it's like she just doesn't want to endure the heat of the like the campaign heat. Like once you say you're in, then everyone's coming for you. And I think that as long as she doesn't decide between the Senate and the governor's race, no one can really quite no one knows who to go after for what thing. And at the same time as she's not running against Dan Sullivan, I'm getting a lot of YouTube ads that are like telling me how bad Dan Sullivan is. And it, you know, it feels to me like there's already like a shadow campaign of some kind, like already happening. It's very interesting to sort of see a different shape to the way, way the campaigns are starting to roll out.
I think that there's like a level of, I think that from the sort of political strategist sense, I think there's a lot of the smart money would be riding on her a run against Sullivan.
I think so too. I think, you know, and one of the things that makes me say that is like she has a you know, former chief of staff that she's really tight with who like I think he's burned a lot of bridges in Alaska, frankly. And I think that he sees a lot better future for himself in DC than he does here in Alaska as like, you know, chief of staff or whatever. And so I think there's going to be, you know, as a main influencer, I think that he's probably pushing her towards that Senate race. And that would be my guess. I have no, you know, particular.
And we do have a candidate for U.S. rep now too.
Yeah. Right. Actually, tell me a little bit about him. Yeah.
So I like him. I mean, with the caveat that I've like worked with him several times now on different stories, but this is Reverend Matt Schultz. He's the Anchorage First Presbyterian, and sort of like a pretty, like I would sort of describe him as a very, very online, sort of progressive leaning person. And so I did a story on him last year for the Alaska Current that was sort of highlighting his talks about the dangers of Christian nationalism. Right. So he was talking really out forward about that. He's involved in a ton of different like social sort of events throughout the city. Very engaged in a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think that like one of the things, and it kind of goes back to what I was talking about with, you know, what I would like to see out of this, you know, these races, is it's someone who's like isn't shy about advocating for the benefits of and the value of government, right? Or of government's capacity to, you know, help the needy and you know, provide you know, care for the afflicted. And I think that is really, I think, a good thing.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's like an interesting sort of like rebuttal to it. I think, again, it's maybe not one of the races that they're necessarily banking on winning, right? But I think that he's a kind of guy who can make Begich sweat a little bit, because I do think that he talks very well about like progressive values and really and how they are not being represented by kind of like the Christian nationalist movement.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic for sure. It'll be I don't know the guy at all personally, but I've listened to one or two of his speeches that he gave on Christian nationalism, and it was a different perspective than I'm used to hearing, and it felt like it felt a little bit like a reframing of the moral high ground. You know, I think a lot of the like right-wing government is sort of propped up by like this holier-than-thou propaganda that comes along with their kind of evangelical base. And it's a weird marriage of like incredibly unethical government with the framework of sort of a ethical blessing. So it's nice to hear someone push back against that and say, this is not what our religion says. This is what it says, and this is my experience with it. And so, yeah, I like hearing that. I don't know. I always feel a little, as someone who like didn't grow up super churchy, I do feel a little squicked out by like a guy with a collar running for office is like, I don't know. But
I mean, I think that again, to me, it speaks to, I think, like the humans contain multitudes, right? And I think that there's like so many different versions of everything, and I think that like it's sort of on us a little bit to sort of like, you know, unlearn some of those sort of squidginesses, right? Where it's like that little reflexive bit of discomfort. But you know, again, it's healthy, right? I think it's probably healthy to be skeptical of everybody.
Absolutely. Right? So. And I think the skepticism comes from how much it's been misused in the past, right? How much it's been,
right.
How much religion has been used to justify terrible policy and to, you know, like, oh, well, this terrible policy doesn't need to be justified or explained because magical sky god. And So I think that to hear a different perspective on it will be refreshing. Well, I think we should wrap things up because I need to go put my laundry in the dryer. Legislature's back in session in January, and things will pick up again then. We'll probably get quite a few more people jumping into races for both for statewide seats and for national offices. And who knows what like wild dice roll of a, you know, what kind of weird policy things will trickle down from the federal level. It could be anything. So
yeah,
let's see what happens. And Matt, it's nice chatting with you. Let's do it again soon.
Yes, for sure. Thank you so much.
Happy 10th anniversary. It's been nice knowing you.
Yeah, it's been great.
All right. We'll talk soon. Bye.
All right. Bye.